Joining us right now on the air, local legend, baby. At least that's what it says on his business card.
All right.
Former Mariner, Steven Souza, joining us right now on the radio show talking some baseball. Steve, how are you, pal? What's going on?
I'm doing great, boys. How you guys doing?
Good.
We're good, man. Welcome back to the show, first of all. And number two, how excited were you over the weekend watching your boy Kelnick pump out a couple of bombs in Peoria, baby?
Yes, sir, boys. I know it's just spring training, but you know you love to see a couple of lasers out the center field, like I told you.
How much do you need to see from him this spring? Or can you even tell in spring? Do you have to wait until the regular season to tell that something's different, something legitimately different about him?
Yeah, so here's what I would say. I would say first you can see the obvious swing adjustment that he made that I think I kind of foreshadowed in the offseason a little bit. I think it looks fantastic, right? And I think you can see his barrel working out to center field, up and through the ball, right? He's got the barrel on his shoulders and he's looking down and his hands stay in a consistent motion. And it's not necessarily that you're judging what he's going to be in the season. You want to see the all-encompassing, right? Like, what are his misses like? What are the takes like? And from the feedback that I see early, I mean, he's hitting the barrel almost every time, even when he's out. I mean, all these outs are loud outs, just misses. Even the curveball he swung through today, like, he was right on it, right? So as far as from a mechanical standpoint and results, I see it. It's there. Like, I don't think he's got a ton more to improve on from a mechanical standpoint. But the beautiful thing about this game, right, is, like, there's two components to this. It's mastering the mechanics and then mastering the mental. That's the part that we don't know. We don't know how it's going to translate in the season, right? It's like spring training. It's super laid back. There's no pressure. There's not a lot on the line. Pitchers don't really do extensive reports on you. They're working on their craft. So it's a little bit of a different judgment that you got to take. But watching him, I think if he can keep the mental together, he's on a course right now to be an all-star.
Wow. Well, that's saying something, number one. And if he makes the All-Star game, then we're going to give you credit because nobody else has the balls to say that right now Jared Kelnick. So if he makes the All-Star game, we're giving you all the credit in the world, man. But Steven Souza is with us on the radio show. And, I mean, dude, I think you're exactly right. You hit the nail on the head. So the mental part of this, like I would equate spring training, I wouldn't all the way equate it to a practice round in golf before day one of a tournament, because he needs to bust his ass to get playing time on this baseball team. But when the lights are bright and everybody's watching him and there's 40,000 people in the stands, what does he really need to do mentally to make sure he gets the most out of his potential?
Yeah, so he said something kind of what I would love to see him continue to do for 162 games. And he said, I want every pitch. But he said that in his interview, I won every pitch. Now, look, it's easy, like I'm saying, in spring training, you go out there, and it's easy to win every pitch because, like I said, there's nothing on the line, there's no pressure. When you have expectations, and when you've been struggling for a little bit, and now you start to see that average matters on the board, and you're hearing from the media what they're saying, now it's about how you're going to respond to that mentally. Can I continue to focus on winning every pitch when I hear the noise? I hear the expectations. I see that I'm not performing, right? Can I maintain that in that maturity? That's going to define Jared Kelnick. If he can maintain the focus on what he needs to do on a daily basis and forget about yesterday, he will be an all-star. I'll stake my claim on it right now.
Wow, unreal.
Our baseball expert, Steven Souza, joining us here on 93.3 KJRFM. And, you know, Softy was kind of in jest, but maybe not totally in jest earlier today after Julio Rodriguez slammed into the wall and got taken out of the game. Was like, you know, put him in bubble wrap for the rest of the spring. And
sit him until the opener, yeah, Steven.
How much do you need spring? Because look what they're doing in the NFL now. I mean, stars in the NFL aren't touching the field in
That's
preseason.
Right.
So right. How much spring training does a star caliber player or even just a veteran good player need?
He needs it. Like I say, he's still young, guys. Like he hasn't been in this game very long. He hasn't even been in this professional game very long. So
right. He
needs these reps. I don't care if it's in the minor league field, but he needs to get out there and play. Like I get that he's the best player on this team. I don't think anybody would question that, and you want to protect him, and you need him out there. But you can't protect him too long. Like, you got to hit the ground running. This is a tough division. You don't want him to be set back in April and waiting around till May and wondering what would have happened if he would have played. That being said, he is going to the World Baseball Classic, so he is going to get those reps. He's going to be ready to go. So I think that they're smart and just protecting him early. It's only the second game. But he needs to be out there in spring training getting ready. He's not 5-6 years into it, understanding the game as much. Although he's mature like that, he still needs it.
Hey, Steven, do me a favor. Your phone's a little scratchy. You got to pull it out of your throat, for God's sakes, or walk outside, or point towards the east or whatever.
Is this better?
It's a little better. We'll see. We'll see as the minutes go by. But this is what happens when people don't have landlines anymore, by the way, in 2023. But Steven Souza Jr. is with us. And you mentioned the World Baseball Classic there. And, look, you know, I'm with you. He's going to get plenty of reps there. But I hate the World Baseball Classic. I hate it. I hate it. I hate it because of two reasons.
Well, of course you do. Why wouldn't you?
Why do I hate it? Tell me why I hate it.
You just think it's a big waste of time, right? You think that these guys are getting them, they're not ready, you're rushing them too quick. Is that where you're at?
Here's what I think. I think the only good that can come out of that, or the only thing that can come out of it, is Julio and Teoscar getting hurt. I don't care if they win the World Baseball Classic. I know for them it's a big deal. For me, it's not. And you know what? In the Dominican, in Puerto Rico, in Venezuela, Japan, whatever, places like that, I'm sure it's gigantic. Does anybody here care about the World Baseball Classic in this country? To see how the Americans do. I don't. I want Julio to go there and get back here as soon as freaking possible. That's what I want. If he's going to have a meaningful at-bat, Steven, it better be for the freaking Seattle Mariners.
I do hear you on that. I think, you know, in 2016, Drew Smyly went to go play for the World Baseball Classic, and he dominated, right? Like, he was throwing 97, and he ended up having Tommy John, right? So, and he, you know, the Mariners are looking at him to have a huge year that year. So I get it. I get your frustration and the skepticism. I think, like what you're saying, if I could elaborate on, like, what the Dominican players, what it means for them and their country.
I agree.
I don't think you can measure it, you know. Like, these guys, like, it's not as big as in America. You're totally right. And that's why you're not seeing Max Scherzer put his arm on the line, because he doesn't care about it as much.
Right.
But these guys in other countries, like, it means the world to them to go back to their country and say, I played for them. And I don't think you can take that away. As much as it scares anybody who does it, it's terrible timing. Like, there's no good way to do it. It's a beautiful thing that needs to be done, but nobody can figure out the timing of it, right? There's no right time to do it.
Right.
Well, you just look at this Dominican lineup, and that tells you how important it is to those guys. And I tweeted this out, that this might be the best lineup in baseball history. Like, where do you land on this? I mean, it's Julio, Soto, Machado, Vlad Guerrero, Devers, Teoscar, Jeremy Peña, Wander Franco, and Francisco Mejia. That's the Dominican lineup. I mean, it's like an all-star. It's an all-star team. Is this the best lineup we've ever seen on a team before, not in an all-star game?
It's pretty close. I mean, you know, you can't sit there and neglect, though. Like, you've got Mike Trout, Mookie Betts, Paul Goldschmidt, Nolan Arenado, Pete Alonso, Tim Anderson. I mean, that's a pretty good lineup.
It's a good team.
Kyle Schwarber, JT Realmuto.
It ain't the Dominicans, though.
The Dominicans are good. You know, the Dominicans, that's one of the best, like, put-together lineups I think I've seen in a long time. I think I wouldn't be surprised if it's a, you know, I don't know how the, you know, the bracket's constructed, but a USA, WBC, and Puerto Rico's really good too. Like, this is, those guys have been showing out for their countries, and, you know, you see the response from the Latin countries, and I think that's, you know, one thing that MLB takes seriously is getting them involved.
Yeah.
Because they're a huge part of our game, right? And so, having them show out and having them go play, it's a cool thing for them to do. A lot of the times, guys don't get hurt, and you just hope it doesn't happen.
Absolutely. All right, Steven Souza with us on the radio show. So let's switch gears to the DH spot. Jerry DePoto was on two different shows last week. He was on with us on Monday and Chuck and Buck on Friday. And he's making the point to me, at least on Monday, Steve, that the DH spot has kind of become a by-committee thing. And I looked it up. There's only 5 players in baseball last year that had more than 400 ABs at the DH spot in the entire game.
So it is a by committee.
It is a by committee thing. But how much of that is because teams don't want to pay that one superstar to be their DH? They can't find that guy? Or is this honestly, in your opinion, is this kind of by committee thing the better way to go?
Yeah, that's a good one. There's the reality is how you get to that guy is very unique. Like JD Martinez didn't start out like that guy. He's one of those guys, right? Nelson Cruz didn't start out like that guy. They all played the field, and then the kind of, for lack of a better word, they ate their way into the DH. You know what I mean? Like they couldn't play the field. So you're like, they're better valued, and we can't lose this bat. Now, when you're on a team that's like super deep, and you want to get guys off the bench, you know, action in there, but you don't want to lose your best hitter, it's a great way to filter through. So I actually am on board with it. I like it. I think it's a way for Julio to get off his feet for a day, get AJ back out there, put AJ in the, like, you can get an outfielder off his feet and keep him in the lineup.
Right.
That's the way I kind of look at it and be unique, or get Sam Haggerty at second base and get Colton Wong off his feet, you know, or JP, whatever. Right? You can get these guys who are out there every single day. It is a day off to not be on your feet every day and be able to go and keep that bat in the lineup. That's super important, and I like it that way.
Steven, we had a baseball game with 15 runs and 25 hits yesterday, and it took 2 hours and 25 minutes. I mean, that is the big story in Major League Baseball this week.
It's beautiful.
Is the time. Oh, tell me more. Tell me more.
I love it, guys. I am all in on the pitch clock. I think there has to be probably a little bit adjusted, maybe. Like maybe a couple extra seconds, I think, seems like it would work out really good. But, I mean, I've seen some of the layovers of, like, I'm sure you guys have seen Pedro Baez in the playoffs and one inning and, like, an inning in spring training right now, and it's like they get through three outs before Pedro Baez even finishes a batter, right? So, and that's an extreme comparison. But I think the crispness of the game, you're really realizing how much dead time there was in baseball that we didn't need. Now, when it comes down to the game on the line, we got to figure that out. We can't have a game ended on a pitch clock. That's devastating. Right. Nobody wants to see that. Nobody paid to come see a game end like that. That'd be like ending on a shot clock violation, but it's a little different. But, nobody wants to see that, right? Like that, the game leads up to that moment in baseball, and you want to be able to watch that play out instead of the umpire and decide that.
Yeah, I agree with that 1,000%. Steven Souza with us. We brought that up today in the first segment of the show because the Braves-Boston game yesterday ended that way with a pitch clock violation that led to a tie in spring training. And I would just, you know, would the players be cool, whether you're a pitcher or a offensive player, with the umpires giving players both on the mound and at the plate a little more leeway when the game's on the line in the ninth inning?
I think you got to kind of get creative. Yeah, for sure. Yeah, I think so. I think you could even turn it off in the ninth.
Wow.
You know, because it's like nobody's going anywhere. That's the moment that, like, you're waiting for, right? If it's a close game,
not a bad
like
idea.
If it's a one-run game, you turn it off. Like,
not a bad
hey,
idea.
Listen, this game's going because you're not leaving the parking lot. It's been 2.5 hours, right? So if that inning lasts 30 minutes, you're watching, or you realize the game's over and you're gone anyway.
Right.
So, but you don't want to speed that last inning up. Like, let's slow the game back down. Like, all right, this is what we're here for, right? Then you keep fans in there a little bit more.
I think that's a hell of an
idea.
That's
a great idea.
Despite what people say about you, Steven, that's a hell of an idea. Just turn it off for the night because, again, you've already made up a gigantic chunk of time, carved a gigantic chunk of time off the game anyway, right, compared to previous seasons. So, yeah, I mean, at that point, you got to get, you know, just make sure that the batter's ready, the pitcher's ready, make sure that everybody is where they need to be to give the fans a great finish, and everyone's getting the best of their ability. So do you think that could actually happen? I mean that I assume that would have to be collectively bargained to do something like that.
We'll call it the Souza rule, though.
You think they would do that, man, honestly?
Yeah, they would. And what has to happen is, like, they'll send it over. You know, they got some smart people in MLB. Raul Ibanez is there. Dan Otero. They got some smart people to work through it who are gathering, surveying from the players in the union. And they'll just say, hey, in this inning, what do you guys think about this? And try to figure it out. And it could be as easy as, like, hey, if it's a save opportunity, we turn it off. Right? And then no save opportunity, we keep it on. That way, if it's 7-0, nobody needs to slow the game down in the ninth inning, right? Like, let's get this thing going so I can get home and get some shut-eye.
Like it.
But if it's, it's as simple as that. If
if the PA rejects it, then the MLB can just implement it if they wanted to, but they just have to. There's a certain time period that was in the collective bargaining agreement. I can't remember if it's a year or if it's like a certain amount of months, but that was one of the bargaining issues that Rob sent over, was we want the ability to implement a rule instantly. And I know we said no, but I don't remember the time frame. So theoretically, they could get it done. It just would have to be either agreed upon or sent over and then waited that period of time, and then it would be implemented.
So do you think they're going to be as strict in the regular season? Say take a fourth inning of a game in May versus the fourth inning of a game today in spring training. Do you think that's going to be the same, or do you think they're going to loosen it up a little bit once they get to the regular season?
I think they're going to get to the end of the spring training by pushing it hard so that players know it's a serious thing and that they have the whole bat. Like, here's the hard lines, right? Like, I need you in here. And maybe they get creative in May and they're like, hey, here's a warning. If you're not in there, it's going to be a strike, you know, or they'll help them out. There'll be something, right? Like, but right now it's, hey, this is a hard line. I need you to follow. And if, you know, they might continue it into May and it just might have players to get adjusted. The only thing you get a little worried about is like games being decided, right? Like, if it's the third inning and the bases are loaded and it's a tie game, yeah, like, and that one run comes in and you win by that run, it's still decided by that pitch clock. That's what I want. If I could ask MLB to do anything, like, be careful with that, because then you're changing the whole structure of the way baseball plays.
Yeah, I just texted Raul Ibanez. You know Raul, he's now the VP of on-field ops for baseball. I texted him your idea. He wrote back and said, that's the dumbest effing thing I've ever heard.
He did.
Tell that guy to shut the hell up. No, he didn't say that. I'll text him when he writes back, because that's a hell of an idea, man. Well, Steven Souza's with us. So, dude, all of a sudden, because we think the Mariners are going to be pretty good this year, who the closer is kind of matters, right? Like we always say, and this team doesn't need a closer. That's the last of your concerns, is who the closer is when you're terrible, but you're going to need a closer, you know, a dominant, bona fide, shutdown closer. So I'm going to give you three options, and I want you to pick one of the following three.
Okay.
Pauly Sewald, Andrés Muñoz, or Matt Brash. Who's your closer?
If you're giving me just those three, I'm taking Munoz.
Why?
Yeah, and here's why. You need big time stuff in the ninth. You need like power stuff. Like, it doesn't matter. I don't care. Paul Sewald is a fantastic pitcher, and he is very capable of doing that in big time playoff situations and moments. You need that guy that's got 100 in the tank, or with a wipeout breaking ball. And Brash has got both of those. But you have to be able to throw it for strikes consistently in the ninth, right? Like, I've seen Kenley Jansen not be able to do that, and it's not the same Kenley Jansen as when he can throw strikes, right? Because you put yourself in a situation where power stuff or not, you have to throw a ball down the middle, and it gets waffled with runners on base, right? So I'm taking Andrés Muñoz, and the sheer fact of, like, his ERA in the second half was unbelievable. And building off that in the playoffs, he was good. With a year more of experience, I have him being the closer. I think you can still get away with it for a while. The Rays seem to do it every year, but me personally, I want Andrés Muñoz to be that guy.
Are there any other candidates? Because you mentioned if we just gave you those three, is there somebody else that you'd think of?
Marco Gonzalez.
Yeah.
Oh, stop.
who
I was going to ask you. I'm going to ask him about Marco, actually.
Who are they? Who's your guys?
I wouldn't sleep on Diesel, Diego Castillo. You know, he's got some good stuff. If he's healthy and that stuff's coming out good, 95 mile an hour sinkers with a power slider, and you don't know if he's going to throw 12 sliders in a row, that's closer stuff. And he closed games for the Rays. I would put him in the mix. I would also, you know, I would take a look at Trevor Gott. From the stuff I've heard, Trevor Gott looks really good. He's closed some games out for the Giants. You never know, but right now I would put Munoz first, and then I'd put Diego Castillo second.
Well, Softy was joking about
I would put Brash in the seventh and let Sewald set up the game in the eighth.
All right.
Got
That's
it.
How I would do it. I like
Got
that. It. So what do you do with Marco? Because, I mean, he's like the one tie to, like, the Kyle Seager era Seattle Mariners that's, like, left on this team, and it just looks like time has passed him by. You're mentioning all these guys that are throwing 98 to 101 miles an hour. You got just unbelievable arms in the starting rotation. He just doesn't seem to fit anywhere.
Yeah, it's tough, you know, especially with him in flex, and you're looking for a fifth starter. I just to be honest, that stuff doesn't play out of the pen. He's a crafty lefty. He's smart. He works super hard, so he's a good leader for the staff. I don't know. I think if you get to the end and you figure out if Flexen or they have enough depth in the minor leagues with starting pitching to be able to draw in there if somebody gets hurt. And so in my mind, I'm thinking I want to see who wins the battle out of spring training, who looks the best between Flexen and Marco, and then I'm trying to figure out a trade for one of those two.
Yeah, well, again.
That's what I would do.
No, it's a good problem to have. There's no question about that. All right, man. Hey, tell people what you're doing these days now that you're an old man and retired from baseball.
That sounds like you're setting me up for a car insurance commercial, but you know what I'm doing? I have a cage, obviously, four cages. We're opening up our Skagit Base by Pros. March 13th is about the official date. I hope so, barring any setbacks. Super excited. Going to run tournaments out of Skagit. It'll be in Mount Vernon. We're going to run infield camps up there. It's going to be awesome. It's this big, giant space. So I've been doing that, training kids how to get ready for college, mental, hitting, all this stuff, Base by Pros. You can catch it at basebypros.com. And come find us, and we will help you get better.
I love it. You're the man. Great stuff, and let's catch up soon. All right, buddy?
Thanks, man.
All right, Tuffy. Appreciate you guys.
You bet. Steven Souza with us on the air. BaseByProsAcademy.com is the website, BaseByProsAcademy.com. You want to find out more? I remember when I was a kid, you know, finding a cage was really hard to do. There was one down in Kent. Yep. People may remember Les's Fat Bat down there.
The Fat Bat,
there was
yep.
like the Funplex up in Everett, whatever. But finding a cage was hard. So Lake Stevens, Linwood, Skagit, Wenatchee, BaseByProsAcademy.com. I think a really good idea by him, honestly, because let's face it, a lot of sports kind of change the rules as the game goes on. Look at the NHL.
That's right.
Right? Look at soccer. Right? When they change things and you go to shootouts and penalty kicks and things like that. So if you tell people we're going to eliminate the pitch clock in games that are within, I don't know, what do you say, four runs
or
less?
I like the save situation.
Whatever,
yeah.
Right? If it's a save situation, we're going to let it go,
yep.
Okay, because we've already accomplished our goal, which is to shorten the game. We're not going to lengthen it that much by changing it for one inning, and you make sure, number one, that you never get burned by it. A game never ends because of it. And number two, you're getting every player to not be able to make any excuses for giving you the best that they've got, mm-hmm. Okay? I think it's a great idea, honestly. I really do. I like it a lot. 49451, you agree with that, that the new pitch clock is good, but Steven Souza's idea, is to dump it in the ninth inning in a save situation. Greg Bell, by the way, will join us as well at 6 p.m. tonight from the Emerald Queen Casino right here on 93.3 KJR-FM.
Now back to Softy and Dick.
Tried out on the field. Two-handed stop.
And that's the dagger.
On your home for the Rim Redland coverage of March Madness.
All right, back here at the Emerald Queen Casino Sportsbook. Every Monday, we're at the EQC, hanging out until 7 o'clock tonight. So get your keister down here and see us. I mean, why would you not want to come down here, for God's sakes? You got the sportsbook, you got the bar, you got me and Dick. And really, that should be enough, is me and Dick. I don't know what more you need besides Softy and Fane. But every Monday at the Emerald Queen Casino. Hey, Carson Wentz is available. You want him?
No!
Come on.
No!
Oh, that's
why
pretty,
not?
That's pretty
what
funny.
What if you come here for $5 million a year?
No, I'd rather have Drew Locke starting for $5 million a year than Carson geez. Wentz for starting $5 million.
You know what? That's just ridiculous.
Really?
And I agree with it. I mean, Carson Wentz, to me, I don't know what happened to him, man. You remember when he looked like he was on the path to superstardom his first couple years in Philadelphia? And then just all of a sudden just fell off the face of the earth when he got hurt and Nick Foles took over, won a title, and he was never
well,
the same.
Well, he was an MVP candidate. I think it was this would have been his second year, right? He was an MVP candidate. He came to Seattle. We beat his ass. Then he got hurt. And you're right. He was absolutely never the same after that injury. Not that – I don't know if there was enough data prior to the injury to say he was definitely going to be an NFL superstar. Tell me, what was
this? 33 touchdowns and 7 picks in 2017 and led the league in QBR. That's pretty good.
That's good.
And then he fell apart. He fell apart. He finished third in the MVP race.
But again, that's
was
one,
never the
it's
same.
One year. It's kind of like Geno's
right.
one. It was 13 games? I mean, Geno put up similar numbers over a, you know, like 9-10 game stretch. And that
right.
doesn't mean he'd do it for the next 5 years.
Well, the difference with Carson Wentz is he did it when he was 25.
That's right.
He did it in his second year in the NFL. So there wasn't 8 years of mediocre football in front of that that led people to believe that this is an aberration. I mean, people thought he was going to be a star, and he just totally, completely fell apart. 33 touchdowns, 7 picks, and finished third in the MVP, second team All-Pro, Pro Bowler, the whole thing. And
wow.
I don't know. I mean, I don't see him as a starting quarterback in the NFL on a playoff-caliber football team right now.
No.
Not at all.
No.
I'm with you.
I don't even know if he's a starter.
I'd rather have Drew Lock. I'd rather have a young, untested young guy that doesn't have, you know, all those years of mediocre football behind him. But I agree with you. I don't think he's a starter on a football team that is serious about making the playoffs.
So why would you sign him then? That's the question. Who is going to sign Carson Wentz?
Well, you sign him to be a backup.
Okay. All right. Yeah. No, that's fine. Yeah. And
what do you mean?
I'm wondering if he'll accept. I mean, he probably thinks that he at least deserves $20-ish million a year in starting caliber money. I know,
yeah.
Low-end starting caliber money, but, I mean, I don't think that's going to be interesting.
I don't think he's going to get that kind of contract. I'd be surprised if somebody gave him that kind of money, because that means he's a starter. And how can you possibly expect Carson Wentz to be your starting quarterback when, number two, he can't stay healthy, and number two, when he is healthy, he's not very good.
Right.
I mean, he's got 38 picks and 38 touchdowns, 16 interceptions the last 2 years. His interception rate has been going up, and his touchdown percentage has been going down. His QBR is dropping like a freaking rock. His QBR in 2017 was 78.5. It was 33 last year. 33. So, yeah, I don't think the guy can play, but that's part of the reason why I think we're still waiting to see what happens with Geno Smith, because there are some decent players out there, Dick, that are available on the market. Most of them, though, can be franchised by their previous team,
yes.
Like Lamar and like Geno Smith. I mean, how many really decent quarterbacks are available right now with no strings attached?
Almost
not many.
None.
I mean,
yeah.
Derek Carr, I don't think he's great. He turns the ball over a ton. There's a reason why the Raiders let him go.
He wants $35 million.
I wouldn't pay him $35 million.
I've always been a Derek Carr fan. I like Derek Carr more than Geno. I'll put it that way. So if I'm willing to pay Geno 28, which that's about the high end of what I'm willing to pay him, I guess that means de facto I'm willing to pay Derek Carr 30.
Yeah, I just think that for me, if you're going to pay a guy that kind of money, he better at least give you an answer that you're comfortable with for a couple years.
Yes.
And I don't think Geno Smith does that. Geno Smith, to me, is an absolute rent-a-quarterback, mm-hmm. because you know he's never going to be good enough to be elite, right?
Right.
He's never going to be good enough to be the difference between a team winning a Super Bowl or making a Super Bowl or making a deep playoff run and not making a deep playoff run. He's just not that kind of impact player.
A guy that can take a good team and make sure they don't miss the playoffs.
Well, I think he is what he is. I think he's a average quarterback who had a good year. He's an average quarterback who had a really good year. And a lot of average quarterbacks have really
good
years.
An average starting quarterback.
Yes, yeah. Yes. Yeah. He's an average starting quarterback who had a really good year. Look at Ryan Fitzpatrick. Look at Ryan Tannehill.
Yep,
a lot of average starting quarterbacks have really good years every now and then. Carson Wentz is a below average quarterback who had a really good year in 2017. So, look, if you play long enough, right?
You're going to pop one.
You're going to pop. You play long enough, at some point you're going to have a good year that may earn you a little bit of money. Look at what Ryan Tannehill did. Look at what Geno Smith did this year.
Yeah.
The thing that sucks for Carson Wentz is that year that he had in 2017 was in year two and not in year four.
But
that's
teams,
the difference.
But teams get so desperate for a quarterback that they will sign that guy that pops, even though most of his work looks like an average quarterback.
Yeah.
They sign
him
based on the potential that he can continue that pop. And good organizations don't do that.
I just think if you're going to commit that kind of money to a quarterback, and I don't have any problem committing that kind of money to a quarterback, right? Okay, it's risky, but I don't have any problem if you want to commit to a guy that you think is going to be an absolute star and a difference maker for a long time. I love Geno for what he did, but I don't think he's that guy. I think we're playing out of our league if we think that Geno Smith is worthy of that kind of money. Now, again, obviously, it depends on what they do at other positions. They're lucky in that they have two tackles and aren't making any money for three more years in Charles Cross and Abe Lucas. Charles Cross has three more years, and Charles has four more years, and Abe's got three because Abe is not on that first-round contract.
That's right.
There's no fifth-year option for Abe Lucas. And right now, Charles Cross looks like the kind of guy that you're going to want to pick up the fifth-year option on. And by the way, too bad for him, because by the time he starts making really insane money, it's not going to be till year six of his NFL career. I mean, that guy deserves to be probably paid a lot more than he's making right now in his rookie deal. But, dude, it's all these people are running around Twitter, and I saw Andrew Brandt came out. Is that his name, Andrew Brandt?
Yeah.
Came out a couple days ago and wrote that the Mahomes thing proves that the idea that you can't win championships when you pay a quarterback a certain percentage of the cap is a lazy narrative. And I just don't agree with that. And I think that people say things like that's a lazy narrative just to escape themselves from any argument against it. It's not a lazy narrative. It's a fact.
Yeah.
And it's not a matter of can't. It's a matter of haven't, because you can do it.
If the Niners have one of the greatest quarterbacks of all time.
So far. But the Niners proved that you can do it in 94, and the Chiefs proved that you can do it in 2023. It's not a matter of can't. It's a matter of haven't. Why hasn't it happened more? Well, because the teams aren't doing things right. Well, what should they be doing differently that the Chiefs did and that the Niners did back in 1994, which was the first year, by the way, of the salary cap? So I don't know how anybody could argue that. That it hasn't been a factor, because it has been a factor. It's happened twice in 30 damn years. You can do it if you want to wait once every 15 years. You can do it. But teams haven't been doing it. Question is why? Why have they not been doing it?
Well, they haven't been doing it because the quarterback is taking up so much money, and that quarterback is not elite enough to overcome the money you can't spend on the rest of your players unless that quarterback's name is Patrick Mahomes. Now, I don't ask you this question. You said Geno couldn't take you to Super Bowl.
Right.
Would Geno...
On his own.
Would Geno have... If Geno was the starting quarterback for the Seahawks in 2013 and 14, would they have won either Super Bowl?
Probably. Yeah, probably. But I think they would have won with anybody at quarterback. I mean, if a guy could walk and chew gum. I'm looking for a mediocre guy. Just an average quarterback. I think that defense was that good, Dick. An average quarterback would have won. I mean, look, taking nothing away from Russell Wilson. He was really good that year. But with Marshawn Lynch and that offensive line and that defense.
That's an interesting
question. I think they could have won. I mean, don't you? We'll come back and talk about that next. Could Geno Smith have won the title in 2013, or did they need what Russell Wilson gave them to win it? We'll talk about that next on Softy and Dick live from the Emerald Queen.
Now back to Softy and Dick.
Trying to outrun the field. Two-handed stuff.
And that's the dagger.
On your home for the Rim Redland coverage of March Madness.
Three catches.
All right, back here at the Emerald Queen Casino, Greg Bell will join us coming up next segment. I got to express our condolences on the loss of Lucky, his dog, by the way. I saw that on Twitter today. Losing a dog freaking sucks, man. Terrible. Anyway, Greg will join us next segment. But the question on the table right now, would the Seahawks have won the title in 2013 with Geno Smith at quarterback and not Russell Wilson? Meaning, would they have won the title with this year's version of Geno Smith, correct?
Correct.
If you could morph the 2022 Geno Smith into 2013 and insert him into the starting lineup, would his numbers, would his performance, whatever he did this year, have been enough? And I don't know. I got to be honest with you. I think I might want to change my answer after thinking about it for 5 minutes during a commercial break and having a couple of cocktails at the EQC Sportsbook bar here. I'm not sure they would have won, because I think a big reason why they won the championship is because they had home field in the playoffs, right? Because the NFC Championship game was at home. That defense was phenomenal, unbelievable, and obviously nobody knows the answer for sure. Mm. We're all just kind of spitballing here. But they had five games, Dick, two of them in overtime, where they won by 5-3, 7-5, and 3. Five of those games. Would Geno Smith's late-game turnovers have lost you one of those two games that you would have won, and instead of 13-3, you're 11-5, and you're playing on the road?
I think I'm with you.
That would be my question.
I'm just looking. I mean, the numbers, let's just go by numbers for a second. They're very similar. Geno's 2022 numbers, 101 passer rating, 61 QBR. So 101, 61. Russell Wilson was 101, 67. 101 passer rating, QBR 67. But there is that magic about Russell that we didn't really see this year. Geno didn't crumble in big situations, but I don't think he necessarily elevated in big situations. Yeah. I mean, I remember
the Niner game in the playoffs, right? The fumble.
Yes.
In the second half of that game that totally turned the tide. Right. We saw that a couple times out of Geno Smith this year, especially in the second half of the year. And your point about QBR and passer rating being equal, that's one reason why we know those numbers do not tell the whole story.
That's correct.
Because Russell Wilson, I think, had a better year in 2013 than Geno Smith did in 2023, because Russell Wilson threw 9 picks the entire year, and Geno had 7 in the second half on his own.
Yes.
Okay? So we know that those numbers don't actually just mean equal performance over 16, 17 weeks by two different guys. I just wonder again, if we agree that that home field dick was so valuable for them, would they have gotten that? Would Geno Smith? And look, maybe he wouldn't have been asked to do what he did in 2023 because he would have had Marshawn Lynch.
Yep.
And he would have had a better defense. How many passes did Geno Smith throw this year versus Russell Wilson in
2013? 572
to
407. Right. He threw 165 more passes than Russell did that year.
In one extra game, right?
Yes.
In one extra game, so which obviously is ridiculous. So I get it. He was asked to do more. It's a different game. It's a different league. It's you got a different defense. You had a different running game. Marshawn was healthy the entire year. Kenny Walker was banged up. Penny was banged up. It's apples and oranges in a lot of ways. But I do think that they would have won the title with a different quarterback. I just don't know if that different quarterback would have been Geno Smith.
Well, a lot of people look back, especially now, because Russell Wilson's not the fan favorite that he once was.
Sure.
So, well, Russell Wilson didn't do anything for that 2013 team.
But we've been having that conversation for a long time. It's a fireside chat. How important was Russell Wilson to the 2013 Seahawks? That conversation, we've been having that for 5 years. 6 years on the show.
We have.
Not just because of the last year.
But I've always been in one of the side that Russell Wilson was very influential in both the 2013 and 14 season. Even when he only threw 407 times, he had almost 600 yards rushing.
Yep.
I mean, he averaged 6 yards a carry.
Okay.
I mean, he was always down the stretch. You always had the confidence that Russell Wilson was going to pull something out.
Right. Okay, so Jackson, is Dick changing his answer, or is that pretty much the same one he gave you a while back?
No, I mean, like, listen, I asked both of you guys this about a month and a half ago. And Dick,
what did
we
say?
I remember bringing this up to you, Dick, and you said, yeah, I think they would have won with Geno Smith. But... I said the same thing. Softy brings up a great point. I will flip my answer too. Softy, credit to you. You bring up great argumentative points,
and I
don't think they would have.
I don't want to influence anybody, so stop doing
that. I
think
you're right.
You know they won 2 games in overtime? The Houston game and the Tampa Bay game. Tampa Bay, they're down 21-0. Houston's the game where Richard Sherman picked off Matt Schaub and his shoe fell off. Remember that?
Mm-hmm.
So they won 2 games in overtime. So if Geno Smith makes a mistake late in the game, and they lose one of them, they don't have the one seed.
That's right.
And it's
right.
Totally different. Totally different that season. Now they had a couple of games they lost that were close and all that, but I don't know, man. I mean, the story.
Look how many yards Russell threw for in the Houston game.
123. Yeah.
Threw for a buck 23. No,
142,
game.
And they scored 29 in week two. 200, and they scored 45 in week three. 210, they scored 28 in that Colt game, which remember that Colt game?
Yeah.
Got off to a great start,
yep.
And they couldn't keep it going. 199 in the loss on that Sunday to the Niners when Frank Gore had that long run right up the middle. He threw for 230 when they scored 41 on Minnesota.
Threw for a buck 08 against Arizona.
Yeah, I mean, he's had a couple of games there where, but he had that it factor, right?
Yeah, he did.
And that's the clutch gene that a lot of guys don't have, and he kind of had it that year, right? I mean, obviously the NFC Championship, the play that stands out to me the most is when Aldon Smith jumped off sides and he hits a curse on fourth down for that touchdown. That kind of put him up for good right in that game. So I don't know. I mean, it's a great question. I just would be concerned about them winning the close games the way they did with Geno Smith, the quarterback. Greg Bell. We'll ask him.
Yeah, let's ask
him. Ask Greg Bell.
What the heck?
What he thinks. Coming up next on 93.3 KJR FM.